As you've just heard, the failing health of the Murray-Darling system is having an adverse impact on traditional owner groups whose homelands span the length of the waterways. Their plight was highlighted last month as video footage of a number of massive fish kills in the Menindee Lakes region went viral. That vision prompted a call from Green Senator Sarah Hanson-Young for a Royal Commission into the management of the river system. And that's a move backed by the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nations, representing 40 traditional owner groups connected to the waterways. Fred Hooper chairs the body and he joins me now. Fred, welcome back to Speaking Out.
Thanks, Larissa.
What's the likelihood that the call from the Greens will succeed?
Well, it has succeed because we do need a Royal Commission into the Murray-Darling Basin, and we need a Royal Commission into the over-allocation of water within the system, and that water being taken out of the system and not being returned to the system, and the theft of water, you know, that was highlighted in the Four Corners report. So, yeah, I think there is a real need for a Royal Commission. And a part of that Royal Commission, one of the terms of reference or several terms of reference, need to look at the cultural association, our association with the river systems, and how important that connection is to us as well, you know, and a lot of those fish that have died are totems of ours, and, you know, they're family, and us river people, we rely on those fish to sustain our lives as well. So, you know, instead of going and buying, you know, expensive food in the shops, when those rivers are running and the fish are running as well, you know, a lot of Aboriginal people in that system go down, they fish, certainly in Brewarrina, where they use the fish traps to catch fish and to sustain family as well.
There are obviously some very good reasons to have one. There's a bit of cynicism about Royal Commissions. You know, we have a lot of them. But from what you're saying, this does sound like the sort of very serious, in-depth issue that would need that level of investigation.
Yeah, you know, like I know ministers are saying that it's caused by the drought, but Nban and Mildren were involved in the National Cultural Flows Research Project, and one of the trial sites for the research was Kuruman Swamp on the Culgar River near Woolloomingal. And some of the data that came out of that research was mind-boggling, you know, and for example, Kuruman Swamp is an off-river area that supports river redgums, and the study showed that without development upstream, Kuruman Swamp would be inundated 86 times out of 100 years. So every 86 years, it would be filled up with water. And, you know, water coming down the Culgar at 7,000 megalitres a day past the gauge at Woolloomingal. But the evidence now says that that swamp only gets filled 29 times out of 100 years. So on average, once every 3 years, that swamp would be inundated. Now it's once in every 10 to 15 years as well. And with the implementation of the Murray-Darling Basin Plan in full, recovering the amount of water that was originally needed to be recovered in the Condamine-Boulogne system, we could get it back up to 49 times out of 100. So half of the time we can get that swamp full. But the water that's coming down the system doesn't only benefit Kuruman Swamp. You know, we only need 150 megalitres of water to run into a Kuruman Swamp. The rest of that water is looking after the river system all the way down to where it runs into the Murray. So there's flushes that goes through the river. And on average, you know, we'd get what we call a banker, so in-river, in-stream flows, 4 times a year. So that's not happening anymore. You're lucky to get a flow down the river system, you know, once every 2 years. So it's development upstream that needs to be looked at as well, and the over-allocation of water in regards to irrigation and theft of water as well. So that's why we fully support a Royal Commission into the Murray-Darling Basin to get to the truth, to get to the bottom of the whole system, and really to find out whether 2,740 gigalitres returned to the system is sufficient. And one of the things that they need to look at as well is the Australian Constitution, because, you know, the Australian Constitution says that the Commonwealth can't impact on the states taking reasonable amount of water for irrigation in the environment. I'd like to know what a reasonable amount of water is. So if, you know, the states are allowing irrigators to pump water out of the river at alarming rates, now these new overland flow licences that prevents the water from getting into the river in the first place, I'd like to know whether that's a reasonable amount of take within the system or not. and whether, you know, the states are breaching the Australian Constitution in regards to that section of the Constitution, because we need to figure out what is a reasonable amount of take.
The public conversation around water management has seen a number of experts calling for a greater input from Aboriginal communities and representatives. Has the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nations been involved with the current processes?
No. The big meeting that they had in Canberra where they've invited everybody in, we didn't get an invite to that as well. Neither did Mildren. There was a lot of involvement in the development of the Murray-Darling Basin Plan and the implementation of the plan as well. We have got some funds to implement the cultural flows research, to take on board a cultural flows research project officer, to look at nation planning and what are the requirements of First Nations people within the Murray-Darling Basin, and then develop that into a nation plan, which then we could develop into an Aboriginal or Northern Basin First Nations water plan as well. But we're certainly not involved in all the discussions that are going on at the moment in regards to the river system and how they're going to fix the river system. I know that the Barkindji people and people along the Barker as well are concerned that they're not being involved in decision-making processes as well. NBAN is the major stakeholder for First Nations people in the Northern Basin. At the moment, we're being left out of that process as well.
You mentioned the Barkindji. The Barkindji traditional owners have recognised rights over 400 kilometres of the Darling. What benefits have there been because of the 2015 ruling?
None.
Well, that's the short answer. That's the short one would have expected it to have done more than that.
Yeah, that's a short answer. Mm. Absolutely nothing, you know, and the Barkindji people rely on that river system. And, you know, there's been studies that says that when that Barker is flowing, the crime rates in Wilcannia and other places, you know, they drop because those kids, they love the water, they love going down to the river, they love swimming, they love fishing and surviving on that river system. And when it's not there, they get bored and then they turn their hands to other things, and that's a tragedy, I think, as well. So certainly for that system. But if we look at the Barker, there are other river systems as well that have no water. You know, the Nemoi Keeper Dam has no water in it at the moment as well. It's down to about 3-4%. You have other systems, the Kalgoa, the Bukhara, the Barwon system that's dry as well, which is affecting places like Walgett, Brewarrina, Gadooga, Woolloomingal as well. So this whole system is affected by over-allocation and overtake of water out of the system. And we need to get back to a sustainable amount of take, so that even if we need to reduce the water licences and get rid of some of these big off-river storages that holds a lot of water as well, we need to do that to balance the environment, irrigation, sustainable irrigation, and cultural purposes as well, so we can look after our culture. And Larissa, under our law, we're responsible for that river system as well, and we're responsible to allow that water to flow to our nations below us. Under our continental law, that's our obligation, and our obligation is to Mother Earth, and our obligation are to the plants and our totems and, you know, the system that we rely on as well. Because I can remember as a kid living at Woolloomingal, my mum used to go down to the river with 20-litre cans of on a yoke, the old Chinese yoke, and bring water from the river and put it in a 44-gallon drum. And then we used to drink that water from the 44-gallon drum, and it was the most beautiful water that you could drink, but certainly wouldn't do that now. And, you know, she wouldn't even be able to get the buckets into the water at the moment because there's no water there as well. So, yeah, it's devastating, and it's devastating to see that the breeding cod, the really big breeding cod in the breeding ground for this whole system, is being killed off by lack of oxygen and blue-green algae and, you know, lack of water coming down that system as well.
It always strikes me when you talk to Aboriginal people about their relationship with the river systems that have sustained them traditionally and now through contemporary societies, that there's so much knowledge, and people have observed quite dramatic changes. They've observed changes in the ecosystem, and of course all the nations that you represent, and yourself included in that, have really seen that as part of the environments that you're living in. To what extent is that knowledge that is in the Aboriginal community being tapped into by researchers and other people interested in truly understanding what's happening with climate?
At the moment, it's very little. I think that we need to take on board that knowledge as well. especially in making decisions about the river system as well. And, you know, people forget there's three types of First Nations people in this country. There's the saltwater people, there's the river people, and there's the desert people. We're the river people, and we've lived on the river for millennia. We know about the river system, you know. One of my old uncles taught me how to track fish in the system. And when he first said to me, he said, "Do you know how to track fish in the rivers?" And I said, "Unc, you can't track fish in water." He said, "No." He said, "You can track how big the cod are, because the river was not always running. They had big pools of water, and you could track the cod by looking under logs and seeing how big the fish were in the next water hole." So that knowledge is being lost, and that knowledge is not being taken into consideration when we're looking at how we can better look after this river system. And I think that, you know, all that knowledge is being wasted, and we certainly need to look at that. And you talk to people like Uncle Badger Bates, the knowledge that they have of that river system as well, that's not being taken into consideration.
The last time you were on the show, you'd finished the Cultural Waterways study. Have any of the recommendations of that report been enacted?
NBN is in the process now of implementing the National Cultural Flows research. So we're looking at implementing the 10-stage, three-step process of the cultural flows. That's nation planning and working out what each nation requires in terms of cultural flows and what type of flows are needed, where they're needed, and how often they're needed. So it's a nationwide, like when I say nationwide, it's the 20-odd nations within NBN and Mildren, or the 40-odd nations within NBN and Mildren, looking at what are the requirements of cultural water. And cultural water is more than just water for the environment. Cultural water takes into consideration economics as well. So what type of economic opportunities are out there for First Nations people on this river system as well, and how we can tap into that as well.
You've mentioned a couple of strategies throughout our discussion about things that might really make a difference, including actually placing greater emphasis on the knowledge of traditional owners and including Indigenous people in the solutions. What are some of the other changes you and NBN are advocating for future management strategies?
Certainly a change to the licensing system as well, because if you're over-allocated through licences, you know, water is a commodity now. You know, it costs a lot of money to buy a megalitre of water. I know that the minister announced $40 million for NBN and Mildren, or for the Northern and the Southern Basin, to buy back water. But in this day and age, with capitalism and the water market, unfortunately you have to buy the licences back, and you have to buy those licences and use that water for other purposes. And it's evident with the environmental water that's bought by the Commonwealth Environmental Water Holder. So it's a licensing process. I think that the licensing process needs to change. I know that in New South Wales, within the Murray-Darling Basin system, you can't get a license, an Aboriginal license, for economics, but you can get a license on the coast for economics. So we certainly need change in the way that the licensing system operates in the Murray-Darling Basin, and certainly in the northern Murray-Darling Basin. One of the other things, I think, is that we're getting a lot of complaints on social media about Cubby Station. The government had the opportunity to buy Cubby Station, the federal government, and when John Howard was the Prime Minister, but they refused to buy it as well. So purchasing some of those big places that are taking a lot of water out of the system, I think that needs to change as well. So we need to look at the environment, and I think that there's a thing called critical human use. So we need to say, well, if a dam's at a certain level, then you can't pump water for irrigation. That water is for critical human use down the river systems. And you see places like Walgett now, which have two rivers running through it, have to rely on bore water, you know, to survive. And, you know, I think that's a tragedy as well.
Well, just finally this evening, Fred, it's a very demanding job that you're doing, and quite at a crisis point at the moment. Literally hundreds of communities relying on you as an advocate for what's essentially a basic human right. Can you share with us how you look after yourself, how you're winding down, especially in the heat that's been out there?
It's hard. It's very hard when you know that there are a lot of people relying on you. And, you know, we've been putting calls into the minister's office to get meetings with the federal minister and that as well. And we haven't got an answer back yet. You know, it's I suppose winding down is trying to get some sleep as well at the night time. But, you know, for people that are living down the river system and the heat, you know, 50-degree heat, it's very hard to take your mind off living in an area that's being devastated by lack of rain, lack of water down the system, and just the change in the climate over the past 20 or 30 years. But sometimes I find, you know, it's good for me to just to get out into a workshop and just muck around and do things to take my mind off it.
Fred, thank you so much for being with us this evening on Speaking Out and sharing your insights into this really critical issue that really should be of concern to all Australians.
No worries. Thanks, Larissa.
Fred Hooper is the chair of NBAN, the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nations.